Sandine's the quarterback. Here's Nylander, scores! Tipped in front. Looks like Tavares with the touch. And the Leafs.
He's tied up by Madison Bowie. They grind along the boards. Out of the scrum, Bastion in front. Sheahan scores! Riley Sheahan! Right place, right time. The Kraken on the board.
Here's Willie Drake busting in. Backhander scores! Oh, what a goal! Forehand, backhand, top shelf.
Gray Pinto in the corner. Swings back at the Winnipeg goal. Just carries on. Gets a shot away. Scores! Pinto blows a top shelf on Comrie and wins this thing in 25 seconds.
TSN 1200.
Ah, we are back. How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 8:15 here on a Monday morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. The weather was way better than it was supposed to be. You can thank me for that. I told you on Friday, other than the fact that I said Sunday wouldn't be very nice, and Sunday was nice. So anyway, it's good to have hockey back, too. We saw the first exhibition games going on, a couple of games Saturday, and then a full slate Sunday, including who will forget who scored the first goal in the history of the Seattle Kraken? Riley Sheahan. Unless you don't count the exhibition, you wait for the regular season. But the Kraken got started last night. They beat Vancouver and, of course, here in Ottawa. All eyes on the Sens as they knock off the Winnipeg Jets in overtime 3-2 thanks to Shane Pinto's goal. Well, as the Sens continue to negotiate with the unsigned Brady Tkachuk, who's getting the deals done here in Ottawa? Right here, right now? I'm telling you what, right here. You're listening to him right here. Getting deals done. Bringing in NHL insiders, including our key off-season signing in the July, August, summer months. Our new NHL insider joining us Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We kind of had a trial run in July. Worked out good. The kid's got some good potential. So we said, let's welcome him back. TSN hockey insider Dave Poulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Doing great, J.R. Simmer. Great to be joining you. And I was a little confused. Is this an 8-year deal or is it a bridge deal? Or are we somewhere in between? Because I think both sides are happy. So
yes.
That's good news.
Well, Dave, we spent weeks and weeks and weeks going back and forth. No, it was about 3 minutes in total, I think it was. So, anyway.
And also to that, Pooley, there was a trio of signings. And I just wonder, as a line, how effective do you think yourself, Mike Johnson, and Jamie Baker would be? I mean, how's this looking? Too much of one thing?
Tell you what. I think we'd be just fine. Because we all have way more offense in our games than we had when we played. We're way smarter now. We're announcers. Are you kidding me? If I'd have done life backwards and announced first and then managed and then coached and then played, can you imagine how good I'd have been? Because it's way easier to do the other three than it is to play.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we're really, really looking forward to having you on this year. I think it's going to be absolutely fantastic getting your insight, and you're going to be doing a bunch of games for TSN television as well, so you'll be watching games live in person. So let's get to the biggest story here in Ottawa, which continues to be Brady Tkachuk, who remains unsigned. We're now about a week into a training camp, and I want to ask you for a status update. We can get that from the likes of Darren Dreger, but in your opinion, Brady Tkachuk missing time in training camp, has it reached a stage where it's starting to become concerning for you, or still too early?
No, I don't like it at all, JR. I don't like missing camp at all. And the longer it goes, you know, I think it is a factor. Now, he's a young guy, and it's not about being in shape or anything, but, you know, being in camp is different. You're with the guys, and there's just that little step in each game that'll just help a little bit, you know. If you're playing six exhibition games as a team, you want to play probably three or four as an individual. And it's all about timing. And that's what it was. I mean, always for me, it was about timing. And no matter what you do away from camp, you can't get that timing without playing and being in camp every day. So there's a deal there to be made. And, you know, whether it's exact term that one or the other side wants or exact numbers or whatever it is, but there's a deal there somewhere to be made. And I really think it's got to buckle down early this week and that they've got to get it done. And if, you know, if one side is a little less happy than the other side, so be it. But certainly with the numbers that they've talked about and the term, each side always looks for perfection in a deal. And sometimes the deal has to get done without perfection for either side.
With the pressure point to me, Pooley, more on the club side, is it basically approach this week of whatever you have to do, you get it done without doing anything stupid?
Yeah, I think so. You're still working within your team's cap structure. And the idea of getting Shabbat done was that Shabbat would be the best player and he'd be the top cap number. Well, you know, if a player outperforms Shabbat's contract or the market outperforms it, then, you know, then that's when the discussions start. But really, it's about your own structure. And, you know, you're looking at the overall picture now and saying, you know, it's likely that you're projecting that Brady Tkachuk is going to be your best forward in the next number of years. Now, there's some pretty good players in that group. You know, Stützle comes to mind as being someone that could push that envelope with Brady Tkachuk. But, you know, you've got some other good young players in Norris and Pinto. Batherson is signed now. But what you're trying to do is set your own internal cap with Brady Tkachuk as, you know, as the guy who's going to get the number. So that's what it is. It's about that number and how that's going to project into the overall cap and then the league cap. But it's your team cap and your team structure that you're trying to get organized first.
Dave, it would appear all the talk has been that the sticking point right now in the negotiation is over structure. And if we're kind of read between the lines and look at things, it's probably over bonus money. The Sens have not negotiated a contract with anybody, any player who got bonus money since Bobby Ryan, we believe, which is dating back now a number of years. How do you, as a former management person in the league, how do you kind of get over philosophical lines in the sand when you also want to get a key player signed?
Well, there's a complexity to this too, JR, because right now with the amount of escrow being paid, we're seeing deals that have gone the other way where they're more back-end loaded than they are front-end loaded with signing bonuses. And that's, you know, so within a year it may be a signing bonus, but overall structure, because of the amount of escrow being paid as the players pay catch-up on this whole pandemic thing, you know, it's actually better to keep the number lower in the first couple of years because the escrow is higher. So you're paying, you know, a percentage on more money versus less money. And so that's one factor that normally wouldn't weigh in. But the signing bonus thing became, you know, a thing that I guess high revenue teams looked at, and Toronto being the classic case. I mean, they were on July 1st, the amount of monies they were paying out, you know, I think Matthews and Marner were both in excess of $15 million on consecutive July 1st and then $750,000 contracts during the year. So they were getting that huge paycheck on July 1st, and not every team's going to be able to do that. I mean, they're just not from a revenue standpoint. And so that is where the sticking point comes in. But once again, you look after your internal cap and you're the Ottawa Senators and you're doing business in the NHL, but you're doing business as the Ottawa Senators and you've got to do what's best for your hockey club. And so that's where arguably the sticking point comes in. And you don't want to get into a situation with all the number of contracts that you're going to have to negotiate in the next 3 or 4 years to set the precedent with one player.
I don't understand, Pooley. Is that what it is, a precedent in a sense of if it's a backloaded contract, I can't for the life of me understand why a signing bonus would be an issue because I'm actually holding on to money at the front that I'll just give you a bit in the back. Is it just not wanting to do that? Is it wanting to avoid? Because I've seen or talked to some people who think also that he's looking for a crazy balloon salary. But if that's an unrestricted free agency, who cares?
Right. Well, you know, you look at it, it's within a year as well. It's not just, you know, so say we're talking about a 6-year deal and the number is higher overall in the years of the last part of the contract. But within that year, you know, it's a July 1st payment. I mean, that's not going to change in terms of what your revenue streams are, Simmer. You're still going to get revenue streams over the course of a year, 5 years from now. And so you're trying to avoid that front end within a year, not just within a contract.
Yeah, I understand that. But in sheer economics on a 6-year deal, Pooley, if the first couple of years I've saved that money, all right, I would do is simply tuck it in the bank and I'm paying it down the road. It's actually a benefit to me no matter where my revenue stream is at.
No, you're right about that, Simmer. And that's, you know, now we're into banking and we're into the financial part of it. Yeah. And you're exactly right. And maybe it's just philosophically that you don't want to do that.
All right, well, let's get to the guys that are with the Sens right now. They had a game and a win last night. One of the jobs that's up for grabs here in Ottawa is the second-line center position. Chris Tierney had, by all accounts, you didn't even have to watch the games. The stats spoke for themselves, but he had a real off year last year. But he's being given the first opportunity to grab the second-line center position between Connor Brown and Timmy Stützle. But you've got a real good young prospect in Shane Pinto who has done nothing to disappoint so far in an audition last year and in the early part of camp this year. How do you kind of see this all playing out, and where do you think DJ Smith is coming at it from?
Well, the beauty of it is going to play out, and Pinto got off to a great start last night. Before he played last year, I had one of his really early games last year when he came into the league, and so I had called some people, you know, some contacts in the NCAA to talk about him as a player, and they talked about how well-rounded his game is and how unusual it was for a player. I mean, he not only won the player of the year, he won the defensive player of the year. Well, that's sort of unprecedented at any junior level or college level, where a high-profile offensive player is also that well-rounded defensively at that age. He is, guys. And you know, I did a couple of his games last year, and I couldn't have been more impressed with the way he handles himself away from the puck. And, you know, even last night, you know, I was just making notes through the game, you know, and I have this little system where I put names into my phone with time codes, and the name Pinto appeared like 8 times in the first 2 periods. And at the start of the third period, he made consecutive plays with his stick, one in the neutral zone and one where he got a good scoring opportunity at the top of the circles, defensive stick. And I simply put, he's the best player in the game right now. Like, he's the best player in the game. Now, this was long before the overtime goal, in which, if you just break down that goal and the thought process of a young player, he knows he's out there against 3 forwards. He knows Andrew Kopp is one of them. Kopp is the best defensively. He attacks Ehlers first. And then Ehlers and Pierre-Luc Dubois flip off. And now, as he rounds the net behind the net, he knows that he has Pierre-Luc Dubois right on his hip. But he waits until he gets into a better scoring position at the top of the slot. And then he almost, like, Pierre-Luc Dubois wouldn't know Shane Pinto as a player. And he doesn't know that maybe Pinto has another half a step that he's not going at right now. And so when he hits the top of the circle, he's a right-hand shot. He explodes just a little half step, and then releases the puck all in one motion. Well, that's pretty impressive for a young player. And as impressed as I was with the goal, it was his play away from the puck last night. It was his face-offs. It was the fact that he was playing on the power play in the slot when he had a great opportunity. He had a couple of good setups to Ennis. But his penalty kill positioning is really, really good. And so, you know, when you say going into camp, this is the way, hypothetically, it's going to work with Tierney in the second hole, you're respectfully saying Tierney's an NHL veteran. Tierney's better suited as a third-line center. And if Pinto takes the job, then that's okay. And, you know, I know the development model says a young player should play in the American Hockey League, that this is why Norris came into the league ready, or Batherson is much more ready now than he's been. But guys, if a guy's ready to play, he's ready to play. And I don't think you can take one model, and, you know, just as we talked about Simmer with contracts, and say this is the way we're going to do it. I think you've got to be flexible. And you've got to say, if a player's ready to help us, because number 12 in the Senators jersey was the best player on the ice last night, guys. And the other team has some good players too. He's a really, really good young player. And I don't get ahead of myself and say, you know, that I don't say this easily. You know, we watched him last year and, you know, in a dozen games, and he was pretty steady. And now he's come in and he just looks comfortable out there. There's a comfort to his game that, believe me, gives DJ Smith comfort, because I can tell when he's putting them out there to take face-offs and be in situations. So I think you're just really encouraged and you let it play out.
Yeah.
You continue to play him and let him go.
It doesn't feel like it's being forced, and at the same time, you don't want to say, well, just because he's better than, because the Sens still are very thin. But how important is also, Poole, if you want to get off to a good start, to maybe not waste too much time with Stutzla, Tierney, and Connor Brown, in the sense of, if ultimately that's going to be Pinto, by the time you roll through this weekend, you should probably make that change versus on the eve of the opening, should you not?
I think you'll see it through the week. You know, if they think that's the way it's going to go, you'll see it. You'll give it a couple of games. You'll probably, ideally, you'd like to play your last 2 exhibition games with a pretty full lineup, Simmer, and I think you'll see it by that point.
Me, interesting on the back end as well, Dave. They brought in Michael Delzato as a free agent. They have, they've said as much, that he and Zaitsev will at least start camp as the so-called shutdown pair. But Erik Brännström has been pretty decent, and a nice shootout goal. Not that he's being paid for shootout goals, but and Victor Mete. Where do you come down on this whole idea of size on defense? Because it's a big debate here in Ottawa. Can you have 2 5-foot-9 guys as part of your 6-man mix on defense?
I think it's tough. I really do. Now, you know, those guys are used to playing at that size. They didn't just get to that size. And that's where, you know, Victor Mete is a little bit more experienced He knows leverage. He knows positioning. He doesn't put himself in bad positions. I just think it's tough. And if you have better options, if they're the best player, they're the best player, then size is aside. But if you have options in order to develop, then I think you've got to look at them as well. I don't think you get to play because you're bigger. You have to be better. But, you know, it's tough in today's NHL with the size of the forwards and particularly positioning in front of the net. And it is going to be even more with the introduction that the big guys can't just cross-check anymore, that you're going to have to be more creative in the way you leverage and the way you use your body and the way you use your feet to get in position. So, you know, I think it can work with Mete and Brännström, but I think long-term, you know, it's tough, and particularly in a playoff series when you get into real battles. If you have options that are bigger, you know, that they may play into effect.
Thoughts on Shabbat and Zub playing together?
Yeah, I like it. Zub, you know, really emerged last year as a really quiet force. And to me, we're back to the partner conversation. Simmer, you and I have had this conversation about how important I think a partner is in the National Hockey League with a star defenseman. And that's what you're trying to develop. You're trying to create as much space for Thomas Chabot as you can, so he is so comfortable doing everything that he can do. And Zub seems to be a guy that can do that, and very understated, but very, very steady. Doesn't attract attention to himself. And, you know, and I think, you know, when you look at partners in Mark Methot, you had one of the better partners in recent history, in my mind, that played with Erik Karlsson when he was at his absolute best. And Karlsson just didn't have to worry about that side of the ice or the front of the net or the corners. He could just be Karlsson.
The Sens made a trade on the weekend and brought in Zach Sanford from St. Louis, a 26-year-old left winger, had 10 goals in 52 games last year, 16 the year before that, but making a bit too much money for where the Blues can put him at. What do you think of Sanford the player, and how do you think he fits in for Ottawa?
I think it's a nice management move. You know, you're looking around the league and seeing, and when you think of salary cap, you know, issues or pressure, you're not thinking of a $2 million a year guy, but that's exactly where you can look to steal a good player. And you know, they may have gotten a little more than people realize in Zach Sanford. And I go back, I think it was a 2013 draft. I know I was still in the business, so it was 13 or 14. I think it was 13. And, you know, he comes out and he was on our radar. He was actually started in the Eastern Junior League before he went to the USHL. And then he, you know, had a couple of years at Boston College. So a player like that is coming out of the world that I lived in, and I followed him. Big kid and pretty good hands and modest success in the NHL. 30 points is his most, but, you know, I think it's a nice pickup for them. And it also is probably spurred by, you know, if you go back to the drafting of Logan Brown, you say, okay, well, Josh Norris and Shane Pinto have come onto the scene, and they're both young guys, and it looks like for those two, the center position is going to be pretty secure, you know, moving forward. And they pass Logan Brown. And when they do that, and you have a chance to take an asset and still, you know, get something back for him, then I think it's a good move. I really do. And that's where you can sort of pick off players that are below, you know, the high-profile salary cap pressure things that we normally think about.
Yeah, certainly a fresh start. Do you think at the end of the day, Logan Brown ends up back in the American League this year, Pulley?
I do. I think, you know, they would know him really well. He grew up in that town, and, you know, they would know him and feel they have a really good handle on him and how they can better develop him. And it's a chance for them to put a big young centerman in their system. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he started in the American League.
All right. On that note, we'll put a wrap on the first installment of many to come over the next days, weeks, and months. Great stuff, Dave. Appreciate you checking in. We're going to give you a day off tomorrow. I want to think about what you've done here this morning. We'll give you a send along a scouting report and bring you back on Wednesday and update you on what you need to get better at, okay?
Perfect. Okay. Have a great day, guys. I love it. I'm always, always on the edge, so that's a good thing.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Have a great day.
Chat Wednesday.
TSN's Dave Poulin on TSN 1200 is a presentation of Myers Automotive Group. New vehicles are landing daily, and Myers is applying all incentives to put you behind the wheel now. Steal your deal at Myers.ca and all 13 Myers. This is TSN 1200.
Come back, 8:41 on this Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer Duke Ellingson will talk NFL with us coming up after 9 o'clock this morning. Got a text in. Got a few, more than a few. Nice job by Pooley in his regular debut. We had the tryout in July on short notice. But then Dave Poulin comes in and hits the ground running as our new Monday, Wednesday, Friday NHL insider. Don't forget Mike Johnson, former NHLer, like Dave, former NCAA player, and now with TSN, he'll be our Tuesday and Thursday guy. So are we going with MJ? Simmer, is that what we're going with?
Is that? I think that's what his reference says. Is he not?
Yes.
When he's on there, so yeah, seems pretty simple.
I'm not tight with him, so I don't know if I feel. I don't like with guys. I've talked to him on the phone, and we've interviewed him a few times, but I never felt good like calling Wayne Gretzky Gretz.
You know what I mean?
Like dropping other people's nicknames when you don't really know them seems a bit offside.
And the other part too, like once in a while, someone will call me Sim, which even one of my best buddies, and I'm probably going to have to cry. I know, but
that's ridiculous.
That's when people don't know you. The best of all time was Greg Haugud, the old NHL player.
Haug?
We were at the under 18 camp in Banff in 85. Never met anybody. He had a nickname not only for everybody at the camp, but he actually had nicknames for NHL players. I'm like, we're only 17 years old. I've even met these guys. He was Hoggy.
Of course he was.
The big Hoggy.
If we're going to call you Sim, then JR is going to be Rod. Yeah. We're going to start calling him Rod, and then I guess I get Ham.
But here's the funny.
Here is,
and again, I'm sure it's for, because, when we have Jamie Baker on, I know how you enter, and it does sound funny when you're like, hey, Jamie, how are you today?
Yes.
Just like if somebody
bakes.
Well, but if somebody says, hey, Simmer or Sean, it sounds funny, but I agree with you. But the Pooley
one. Should I ask him?
Oh, like, he's baked, so that's the whole thing. It's just like I'm Simmer, just like you're JR, just like Hammer. No, it's good.
Well, we're all friends here.
Exactly.
Like we want to be cool and sound like we're all best buds.
But you're also like the GM. You sign these players, so if they're comfortable or not.
Yeah.
But you got Bakes, MJ, and Pooley.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Pooley took him in. It was all of 3 minutes to get that one on the dotted line.
Yeah.
Easy guy to deal with.
I still feel like the call might be coming from the Sens and Newport Sports. Just an opportunity as a mediator.
Solve this Tkachuk crisis,
the
JR.
The big lefty. Let's get in there. What do we got going on here?
Go to the pen and let's get her done.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and nothing happening as of today. The rumor was going into the weekend. The talk at the rink was it was going to happen on the weekend or might happen on the weekend. And, here we are a Monday morning and so far nothing. So we enter week two. And Sens, by the way, are off today. Got to practice tomorrow, and then Leafs here for the next game coming up on Wednesday.
And to that, JR, from a team aspect, I'm not going to get carried away until probably October 13th, but you're also past the phase of talking about, and hey, you have to as a manager. I understand when you're asked, you say, we're keeping it positive. But at this point, if you've talked that much, now it's time to walk the walk here. And that's for both sides. It's not just all on the Sens. It's for both sides. You can't really, again, this is really the way it was set up and why the alarm bells went off for me. Like, it was really poised by not only the Sens, but also people that kind of write what they're told by the Sens, that a deal was almost imminent, right? And I also, on the weekend, I don't know, and this is one of the things with the people I talk to are more philosophical in a sense of what's going on.
Mm.
Nobody's ever talked to me about numbers, and I was just kind of surprised because what had been termed to me again was just, when this is what did Darren Dreger not say exactly what I said in a sense of, I don't think they're close to a deal? Now, that doesn't mean they can't make a deal, because you always have to say that. But I was like, really? You really think something's fairly imminent? I did not get that vibe. But as I said, that I'm just getting kind of a philosophical information. I'm not getting, this is what the structure and everything else.
Yep.
There's a million rumors on that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the last time we heard from Pierre Dorion, he, which was mid last week, Thursday or so, continued to say things are positive. As he said, we don't negotiate through the media. So we'll wait and see. Okay, 8:45. Let's touch on a little bit of NFL from yesterday because, we should mention if you miss Paul Appelese, Red Blacks head coach, who was on with us in the 7 o'clock hour. They are going to be going with the two rookie quarterbacks. He just wouldn't tell us which one. Not that I think for most fans who have seen neither of them throw one pass, you'd know which might be the better choice. But Caleb Evans and Taron Christian will be the two Red Blacks quarterbacks tomorrow night when they take on Edmonton. In the NFL, the Sunday night game, tell you what, the primetime games have been pretty good for the most part. They have all been pretty exciting except for, the Rams and the Bears. The first Sunday night game was not very good at all. But the last couple, right, Kansas City-Baltimore last weekend, Sunday night game was fantastic. Game last night went right down to the final play of the game. A Mason Crosby 51-yard field goal wins it at the gun for the Packers, 30-28 over San Fran, who had just gone ahead with a touchdown with 37 seconds to go, and then Aaron Rodgers got the Packers with no timeouts into position to win the game on that field goal. Here is Rodgers on that last drive.
Matt actually suggested that play on the sideline, that first play, which was something we actually worked on Friday at practice, kind of scribbling in the dirt. and it worked out perfect. Just put it right over Fred's head. Got us kind of down there a little bit. We needed one more play. How could he not be romantic about football, man?
There you go. There's your best bud, Aaron Rodgers, and that play's dying boat was a beautiful pass to Devontae Adams. It just feels like when Rodgers and Adams want to complete a pass, they just can every single time. Yeah. Rodgers is good, and Adams is arguably the best receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, I saw that a little bit in the Rams game. It felt like when Kupp wanted to get open, even when you know he's getting the ball, JR, it still goes to him. In the case of Green Bay, everybody on the field knows it's happening and what has to happen. And I guess this is always the influence of not wanting to get burned for a touchdown, right? But in essence, you get burned for playing a bit of a prevent defense when you know exactly what's going to happen.
What's the only thing a prevent defense does? It prevents you from winning, is the old old saying on that one. So big win for the Packers. They knock the Niners from the ranks of the unbeaten as they fall to 2-1. Arguably, the game of the day going in was going to be Rams and Bucks. Brady and the Bucks, your Bucks, sort of. When the Patriots aren't very good, then it's Tom Brady for you. Yesterday, he got out-dueled by Matthew Stafford, who threw 4 touchdown passes.
Third down and 10, well protected, steps up, launches deep down the right numbers, all alone, DeSean Jackson over the shoulder at the 30. He weaves his way to the end zone. Touchdown, L.A., 75 yards. Welcome home, DeSean Jackson. He gives the Rams a 2-touchdown lead.
Who was the first guy to greet DeSean Jackson in the end zone? It wasn't any of the other receivers or it wasn't Matthew Stafford. It was Sean McVay, the head coach, racing to the end zone. Like, that guy is wired unlike any coach, I think, in the did you see him at the end of the first half? His reaction to the play at the end of the first half and then going and then running into the locker room?
I thought he had to
room?
Take a leak because he was trying to get past the
oh
player.
My God.
The other part with him, and this is also the change here, he's actually in shape. I mean, hey, that's unfortunate when you watch on the side of the sideline, and obviously Andy Reid going to the hospital yesterday. A lot of these guys look like they've worked themselves into the ground. The guy's fired up, and he had just missed DeSean Jackson. Was it earlier in the game? I think it was a pretty good defensive play. But for 34 years old, and I know you're familiar with him, and he's oft injured, but jeepers. Does he still have a motor, right?
He's got wheels.
Yeah, and you watched that yesterday. First of all, no running game at all for the Bucks. And I just think for a guy, and cool that Tom Brady had never played a game in Southern California his whole career, that's a first. And they kept saying on the broadcast, and so true for Stafford, how many meaningful games has he played in his career? And I just don't know. You couldn't ask for a better situation than what has happened to that program since he took over for Goff, even having given the first 2 first-round picks. Hey, they're in it to win it, and right now be hard to bet against them as being an opportunity to host the Super Bowl at home.
If there is a surprising team so far early on just in terms of record, and again, it's early, it is probably the 1-2 Kansas City Chiefs, who right now are sitting last in the AFC West. They had a big game at home with the Chargers yesterday. Let's take you to the dying minutes and the game tied at 24.
Mahomes to pass. All kinds of time rolling to his right, extending the play. And now Bosa going to collapse the pocket. Ball is up, and it is intercepted. Intercepted by Aloe Gilman. Mahomes inexplicably threw that thing up for grabs and just floated it to the defensive backfield, and Gilman tracked it down for the 4th forced turnover by the Chargers today.
It's just it's a terrible decision by Patrick Mahomes. Like, it is the last thing you would expect him to do is throw a ball up for grabs in a tie game from his own end. Late in the game, like it, and the Chargers took that turnover and turned it into the game-winning points. Like, I'm really, really shocked to see Patrick Mahomes make that kind of mistake.
Yeah, and how early on, I mean, a little better yesterday with Allaire, but abandoned the running game, JR, and it seemed like, boy, that pass, first of all, to make to the tight end Kelce in the middle of the field has to be a perfect ball, right? And he felt like he kept kind of throwing it too much, and you've got Tyreek Hill, and yeah, I agree. It just feels a little different from, I don't know, from a weapons standpoint, if it's any different. But it looks like kind of people have figured out some of the video game stuff, especially with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, and I don't think the Chiefs, listen, they're still going to be really good. And you got Patrick Mahomes, you got Hill, you got Edwards-Helaire, you got Kelce. You still have some weapons, but they have lost a lot of the other playmakers. It's still a good list, don't get me wrong. But I think that offense is still feared, but maybe not as feared as much as it was And if they were to sustain an injury, especially to Tyreek Hill, that team could be in a whole bunch of trouble.
Well, and it just comes back to the quarterback making too much dough.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's you know, we'll see how where it all is going forward. But Patrick Mahomes has now moved into territory where well, his average is out to $50 million. I don't know what he's actually getting paid in terms of, but he is the highest paid quarterback in the league. And it will go back to, can you win in any sport, but in the National Football League, when you're paying your quarterback, what's he making, about 20% or thereabouts of the entire salary?
Well, this
cap?
Year it's 180, so yeah. He's actually higher than that year.
Yeah. So can you win? Can you sustain enough good other players to be able to win in the NFL when you pay your quarterback that much?
I think you can, but almost like if I was looking at the model of the Rams, it's kind of a one strike, right? You one strike and you do it, and then eventually everything just kind of comes in where that next guy off the roster is gone, right? Like you slowly whittle it away. And I think also the neat story is just quite simply the Chargers. And in last year, where everything kind of was a roller coaster of very bad coaching, to shift over from Tyrod Taylor and end up finding a quarterback, and just watching that last night as well, that, hey, also full marks to the Chargers that have certainly arrived.
Justin Herbert is, for those that haven't watched him, I mean, I watched a little bit last year, but I've watched the last two games in their entirety, so against Dallas, and he had a couple of mistakes last week. But then yesterday, for a guy who's in his second year and three games in, this guy is going to be, I'm calling it, you know, and this is not me, I'm not the only person saying it, he is going to be a top three quarterback in the NFL, if he's not there already, by the end of the season. Like, yeah. He is a fantastic football player.
Yeah, and watching yesterday, I would say, and I'd probably put Fields in that same thing, he'll probably be top five by the end of the year. Oh, my God.
Wow. Hey, when you're running for your life, man, you're running for your life.
To get sacked nine times, JR. Yeah. But, I guess I'm just fascinated. Like, we talk about goaltenders. When it comes to quarterbacks in the NFL, I just love to be in some of these draft rooms for where he's drafted, to other guys where people trade up, like Trubisky, and give up two first-round picks on a bust. You know what I mean? Like, it's not easy. But you watch him out there, it's just so impressive the way he handles himself, right? It's the demeanor. It's the leadership. It's the maturity. And obviously, he can play some ball, and he's got some pretty good weapons around him, too. And the best uniforms in professional sports, along with the St. Louis Blues, baby blue.
Yeah. 100%. I just wish they wear them more often.
Yeah, I agree. And as far as I thought you were going to say whatever surprise, I feel like the Raiders situation is exactly like the Steelers last year. I know they're winning, but it's kind of like
they're just eking out.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Were the Steelers 9-0?
11-0.
11-0. Yeah. And you're just kind of like, I don't know, man. This doesn't seem to be really. And is that the best division in football right now?
Talking about the AFC West?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you top to bottom, you'd say that, or the NFC West. The power is in the West in both conferences. That's what we do know for sure. We'll end on a record-breaking kick yesterday, and we'll listen to this from both sides. So it was the best of times, and it was the worst of times, as the Ravens somehow converted a 4th-and-19 from their own 16 with like a few seconds left. Somehow, some way, they got in a position to get Justin Tucker in the spot where he could try a record-breaking 66-yard field goal to win the game versus the Lions. Here's how it sounded on Ravens radio.
66-yard field goal try for Justin Tucker. It would be the longest in NFL history if it's good. A 66-yard try. Tucker's kick is on the way. It is good! Crossbar, and it tumbles through. It is good! Time has expired. Justin Tucker with the longest field goal in NFL history. The hay is in the barn, and it's mayhem on the field.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so there we go. That was the best of times. That's how it sounded for the Ravens. Here's how it sounded for the Lions.
66-yard attempt for Justin Tucker. This game hangs in the balance with the longest kick in the history of the National Football League on the line. Tucker's ready. There's the snap. Spot down. Kick on the way. It is up, and it is off the crossbar and through. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me?
That is just such a Detroit Lions to lose
that's
games.
That's out of a movie, JR. That's Major League the movie. Like, honestly, that ends up happening. 66 yards.
And off the crossbar. Oh, like, yeah. It could go probably, if you were to hit the crossbar, you know, with a kick at that height. Like, he had absolutely hammered, obviously, with everything that he's got. For it to bounce, to hit at an angle, so it's a round crossbar and an oblong ball, for it to have, you know, hit at that exact thing where it goes, propels forward and not up and backwards is, well, it's inexplicable.
Well, and by the time it starts coming down a bit, JR, the rotation is so fast, right? As you said, generally, there's no way that's going to end up happening. But, what was the old record, JR?
64. And so what's interesting is the old record was 64 by Matt Prater, who I think did it with the Denver Broncos. Matt Prater tried a 68-yard field goal at the end of the first half yesterday. He now kicks for Arizona. He came up about, a yard short because Jacksonville had a guy at the back of the end zone who grabbed it and returned it the entire way. 109, so a record-tying 109-yard missed field goal return. So Matt Prater is kind of in the middle of old history and new history yesterday. So it was amazing how these kind of worlds collide when it comes to all that. So what a fascinating, fascinating day in the NFL. And we'll wrap it up tonight with a rivalry game. Eagles-Cowboys. Eagles-Cowboys.
How about them Cowboys?
Eagles!
That's what I was waiting for right there.
What are you feeling? I've been pretty impressed with Dallas so far through the first couple of weeks. Have you? Better than you expected?
Dallas? They've been on the road both games, and they were competitive against Tampa for sure, and then beat the Chargers last week. Now San Diego or LA had a couple of touchdowns called back, but a win is a win. That's all that matters. So yeah, I'll say Dallas has been decent. Philadelphia was really good against a really bad Atlanta team. They were so-so against San Fran. So not sure what to expect. Dallas is at home. Philadelphia's in a rebuild year. Dallas should win the game tonight. So that's why. I'm playing with the house money tonight. Eagles shouldn't win the game tonight. So if they do, I'll be crowing like nobody's business tomorrow. If they don't, I'll be just going, they were supposed to lose anyway.
Yeah, and after watching the Redskins' supposedly elite defense against Buffalo, without a quarterback, going to be
That's
a long
the football
year.
Team,
oh, sorry. I'm
the
sorry.
Football team. Let's get the fine jar out again for Simmer, please. Thank you.
The Washington Football Club.
And that's a crock of crap you're feeding us here.
What's that?
That you don't care if the Eagles lose.
No,
to
I care.
The
I care if they win or lose. What I'm saying is,
they're not supposed to win. So if they win, it's gravy. If they lose, hey, they weren't supposed to win.
It's how I'm going
place.
To present things on the radio machine tomorrow. Okay.
You're gonna be hurting. You're gonna know that Lever Sage is in his house celebrating.
I will live with the comfort of knowing that the Cowboys will inevitably, at some point, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory this season. They will somehow fall short, as they have done for pretty much the last three decades, as I remind all the Cowboy fans that are in my life of, hey, has your team won a Super Bowl in the 2000s? Have they even been to have they been to a conference championship game in the last 26 or 27 years? And the answer to all of those is no, they haven't. Yeah, thank you. But they do have three playoff wins since 1995. So that's pretty, that's verging on 30 years. A win every decade. I mean, really, is that bad? Is it too much to ask?
How about a Zoom post-game show with JR and Lee tonight on TSN 1200? I want to see it.
I'm just sort of going through the picks from the pick'em pool. Looks like we got some people did some nice picks. We got the leader at 23 right now. Phil 44 CA looks like our leader.
That's crazy.
Going into tonight's game.
Was I bad? I'm not playing because Hammer just pointed at me. Was I bad?
Do you think JR would be bringing this up?
Okay. No, just looking. It's one of the rare times I didn't look, Hammer, so I stunk it up.
Bunda's at 20, so that's pretty darn good.
That's a
good.
Huge week for B.
Yeah. Let's see here. Our friend at security, Eddie at security, is at 17. Oh, there I am at 16.
Eddie was able to settle himself down after last week when we had to go through the front door.
That's right. That's a bit of an inside story there. Yeah. But regardless, let's see. So I'm tied for third. Let's see here. Oh, there you are, Hammer. You're only one back of me. Oh,
don't say there you are. I'm right underneath you. You didn't have to look far.
A little further down. Some long balls. Deepers. That's good. Hammer. That's, creatures there. Three for Sage Lloyd. Oh, there you are, Simmer, at 12.
Oh,
12.
Okay. Okay. North of 10 is my goal.
Okay.
Just like in school, 50%. So that's okay.
You're ahead of one other person in the TSN 1200.
I really want to do over as well on my Super Bowl picks.
Which were what? Remind
Why
everyone
Patriots
again?
Suck. I'm going to even stop picking them in the pick'em pool. Like, this is not going
How
anywhere.
You pick the Patriots to
you
be in the Super Bowl?
You always have to
honestly.
Pick your favorite team.
That is, it is, no, it, no,
it's
but,
a rule.
It, no, but it, no, in the picks for the year, though, that it is actually semi-embarrassing. Yeah, it really is.
They got thumped yesterday by the Saints, no doubt about it. All right, we're going to talk more NFL with Duke Ellington coming up in just a few minutes. And more on the Sens. Big win last night over the Jets, relatively speaking. I know it's exhibition, but the right people impressed, maybe more importantly. So we'll talk about that next hour. Get more of your reaction as well. Keep it coming. Text us, tweet at us, call us, 613-750-1200. More coming up next hour on that, and we'll get you right up to date on the baseball situation as we enter the final week of the regular season and the Jays one game back of the final wildcard spot. All of that coming up right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.